This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. It's a choice to let go of your battle with shame. It's serving no purpose except to keep you stuck in the past. Feel remorse, make amends, live differently, cry it out. My working definition of self-acceptance is this: recognizing that neither your strengths nor your vulnerabilities completely define you, and vice versa. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Shame may be one of the most, if not the most, devastating feeling about yourself that you can have. I was interviewed this week by a Swedish journalist who asked me some probing questions about my own history with shame, as she read an article I wrote in Psychology Today on just that topic. Here's the last paragraph of that article. The funny thing that shame does, it lies to you. It tells you that you're so terrible, that you must be the worst of the worst. So when you meet someone else that you like, trust, respect, and they tell you they understand and have lived what you're living, gone through what you're going through, you figure out shame has been lying to you all along. Today we're going to talk just about that, and I'm going to let you know that I have suffered with shame and that I have believed that I was the worst of the worst. And perhaps that can help you with whatever lies your shame is telling you. First, we're going to talk about how shame talks to you using the constant commentary of the voices of shame in your head, your inner dialogue that's always commenting and often criticizing what you're doing or saying or thinking or feeling. Second, how shame gets away with lying to you and how to acknowledge the power of its lies. And third, how can you stop that from happening, or at least become much more aware of when shame is yapping away at you, and how to challenge it and even turn down its volume so you can make decisions free from shame's voice? Here's a hint. You want to challenge it. You choose to believe differently about yourself, and that becomes your innermost desire. And the freedom you can find from shame is astounding. The listener voicemail today is from an older mom who says to me, "I just don't want to carry the pain of disconnection." She realizes in a very poignant way that her pain and depression has to do with being the youngest child of 12 in her family, but now doesn't feel connected to her own grown children except when they need something. We'll tackle what she might can do to feel the connection she yearns for, and my answer may surprise you. Let's hear from AG1 Next Gen. They have three new flavors. Fall is peeking out from around the corner, and I'm really enjoying my walk to start my morning. But when my husband comes down and gets out the AG1, the vitamin, mineral, and adaptogen-packed green great-for-you drink, it's also become part of my morning routine. Finding an AG1 partner or having one handy, like I do, makes it easier to remember to do it. And as a couple, frankly, it feels good to commit to each other that we're putting our health at the top of the to-do list every day. And now, AG1 Next Gen comes in three fantastic flavors: tropical, berry, and citrus. And for me, citrus is my fave so far. It's never too late to create a new healthy habit for 2025, so try AG1 for yourself. It's something I've been able to stay consistent with, and that's why I've been partnering with AG1 for so long. And AG1 is offering new subscribers a free $76 gift when you sign up. You'll get a welcome kit, a bottle of vitamin D3 K2, very important, and 5 free travel packs in your first box. So make sure to check out drinkag1.com/selfwork to get this offer. That's drinkag1.com/selfwork to continue your year on a healthier note. So first in this episode, let's talk about what shame is. Shame is the belief or the feeling that you're bad. Guilt is different than shame. Guilt is remorse over something you said or did or even thought. But guilt doesn't tell you you're a bad person. That's shame's job. But how does shame get inside of you? What is shame's way of entrenching itself in your gut or your brain or even your soul? It talks to you in your head. Now, before you think I'm talking complete nonsense here, think about what goes on in your head day in and day out. Take going to the grocery store, for example. You don't talk out loud to yourself as you're shopping, but you can listen into your thoughts as you shop, right? The avocados look good today. Or, we need to eat fish pretty soon. That would be good for us. Or, and here's a shameful voice, you can't buy the potato chips and put them in your cart. You're fat already. So the voices inside your head could offer information, reminders, maybe a little editorializing about the avocados. They could be positive things like, good job that you've made time to make it to the market. You're afraid you'd be too busy. Or they could be negative and shameful voices, as with the potato chip commentary. Sadly, your shaming voice can be quite loud. It can be insistent, and it can be powerful, especially if you don't learn how to confront its voice. And if you began hearing it as a child, maybe you absorbed shame because of discrimination or abuse, neglect, or just poor parenting, your voice of shame could be quite strong with years of practice under its belt. And remember, the result of shame is that you feel less than, less worthy, less lovable, less acceptable. So that's how shame gets under your skin, quite literally. If you doubt me about the presence of those voices in your head, the DJ that is always commenting on the decisions you're making or the memories that may come up during a day's time, I want you to try this. Just try to become very still. In fact, be very quiet. Sit and focus on your breathing. After all, your breathing is something you do all day, every day, 24/7, and you don't even think about it. It happens without you thinking about it, right? So just sit for a couple of minutes, shut off your brain, and focus solely on your breathing in, out. You might count your breaths, 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, unless you've been practicing meditation for a long time, you won't be able to go much more than a few seconds without a thought or an emotion popping into your head, like, I bet I look stupid, or, well, all I can think about is what I'm going to do tonight to catch up. Why? Because your brain is constantly going, constantly processing. And you, whether you've realized it or not, are constantly listening to the voices in your head or the voice in your head that's commenting on whatever is going on. It's like a referee for your brain game. Or you could be feeling an emotion and the DJ in your brain says, well, that's stupid to feel that way. Or, of course you feel that way. Who wouldn't? It's really amazing that all this goes on during our waking hours and during sleep. EEG, or electroencephalograms, still record constant brain activity, but on a lower level or different frequencies, so to speak, than during the day. It's amazing. So hopefully you now believe that your inner voice is with you constantly. And if it's a shaming voice, that's trouble. Unless you somehow should feel a transitory shame, maybe you screwed up somehow, but you can let that kind of shame go much more easily. It's transitory. But the real problem is when you believe that voice. I hope in this episode, if I talk about my own battle with shame in very personal terms, that you may be more able to describe and see your own. So here goes. I mentioned in the intro that a journalist had contacted me to talk with her about the very real shame I battled in my lifetime, that occasionally I still battle, but the skirmishes are not very long, as I recognize now much more quickly what's going on in the background of my mind and decide to stop that criticism when I don't believe it's helpful. Her questions were very direct about my shame. What did your voice of shame tell you? How did you begin to confront it? Answering her questions made me want to use this story to perhaps help you with your own shame battle. So, what was I so ashamed about? Basically, as some of you may remember, I had a little more than 10 years of creating chaos in my life. I chose partners for the wrong reason. I married my first husband for the wrong reason. I had an affair and was so ashamed of that fact that I worked for 7 long years to transform that capital M mistake and the man that was involved in that mistake. I wanted to transform that into my dream life, the relationship that was supposed to be. First, I found out that you don't fix one mistake by making another. And second, what does Maya Angelou say? When someone shows you who they are, believe them. Well, that's what I didn't do either. And third, I wasn't living by my own values. I knew it, but kept lying to myself about it. What I know now, that was my shame that was lying to me. It was that voice that seemed ever-present. It said, you can fix your life by making this second relationship what you want and need it to be. I felt immense pressure to do that. I believed that voice. I needed to fix things. But sadly, fixing things meant continuing to lie to myself and others about what was really going on. But what was I supposed to do? My shame also informed me that only people who were complete losers got 2 divorces. So I'd be a complete failure. Well, that wasn't true. Maybe I was immature, maybe lost, maybe emotionally damaged in some way, and I was all of that. Eventually, I chose the potential shame of looking to the world like a big loser. Now, would I say that to someone else who was getting their second divorce? No, of course not. But I said it to myself over and over. It was still what I decided to do, and for that, I'm very grateful, because I figured out I could live with that shame. What I didn't know at first was that even with the decision to divorce again, my voice of shame was lying to me. I could heal from it. I could accept my mistakes and my lostness. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. I've been talking about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth now for a while, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels, with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide, with 98% of them saying they recommend it to friends and family. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating, reduce sugar cravings, support healthy, sustainable weight management, and boost energy. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so that you feel like yourself again. And what's phenomenal? Your gut is constantly sending messages to your brain, so better gut health can mean better mental health overall. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and hormone harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, HappyMammoth.com, and use SELFWORK for 15% off today. Let's list for a minute the 3 lies that my shame told me. Number 1. You can get rid of me by marrying the man you had an affair with. That was a lie. Number 2, I'll never go away if you get a second divorce. Also a lie. And number 3, a totally different kind of lie. A second divorce will make you a complete loser and no one will want to be with you. So how do you heal from shame? How do you confront its message? First, you have to decide to do just that. You have to realize the daily burden of shame you're carrying. You're not only trying to live today and solve today's problems as well as you can, but you're carrying around the weight of your mistakes or your stupidity, whatever you're calling it, or whatever your shaming voice is telling you it still is. Years later, I was still keeping my 2 divorces a secret because of fear of what others would think. And then I didn't anymore, because it was a waste of my time and energy. There were many more important things to do, like raise a child, create a stable marriage with my husband, build a practice, help other people with their shame. I've had many people look at me and say, but I don't know how to let it go. Maybe you feel shame because you mistreated someone, or you feel shame about how you were mistreated yourself. Maybe how you lost your way, how you slept around or did drugs or stayed angry all the time and did mean things. Maybe you used someone or manipulated them. Who knows? There are so many ways to hurt and be hurt in our world. Remorse is one thing. Remorse leads you to an apology or some kind of making amends. Be remorseful, but not shaming. Now, maybe you call it self-forgiveness. Maybe you have a spiritual faith that tells you that you're already forgiven. But I've had people through the years who had deep faith, but struggled to forgive themselves or let their shame go. So, could your shame be lying to you? The journalist asked me this question as well. What kept you from letting go of your shame more quickly? Here was my answer. Because I didn't think I was worth it. When you shame yourself and brand yourself a loser, why would you believe that you're worth changing how you think or believe? You don't. There was part of me that believed I wasn't worth forgiving. What else helped? The love of my husband, son, and family, my good friends, being able to help others with their own shame. After all, I knew the process very well. Finding the courage to be open about my mistakes and living with them, integrating them into who I was and am, being more clear about what I could offer others, and I wanted to truly learn self-acceptance. It's a choice to let go of your battle with shame. It's serving no purpose except to keep you stuck in the past. Feel remorse, make amends, live differently, cry it out. My working definition of self-acceptance is this: recognizing that neither your strengths nor your vulnerabilities completely define you, and vice versa. Your vulnerabilities, your mistakes, your screw-ups, I don't care what you call it, they don't erase your strengths unless you believe they do. So challenge that thought. Challenge the lie that there's no way out of shame. Get help if you need it. After all, asking for help means you're very determined to succeed.
SpeakPipe message from DrMargaretRutherford.com.
Let's hear now from our listener voicemail, a mom who feels disconnected from her grown children.
Hi. I guess I just wanted to say that I wish I had a closer relationship with my three adult children, and I feel very uninvited, not included, not part of, unless they need something or want a babysitter. But I know this goes back to my past. I'm the youngest of 12, so I always kind of felt invisible. There's been many years of depression and because of this, and I don't know how to change it. I'm going to be 60 years old, and I don't know how to move forward. I know I just don't want to carry the pain anymore. The pain of disconnection. Help me.
I was so pleased that this listener had figured out that her own childhood, being the youngest of 12 children, had a good deal to do with her perceptions now as an adult. She doesn't say, however, how her past has specifically affected her. So here are a couple of my ideas. She might be overly sensitive to being overlooked or feeling invisible because that's the way she was treated. Again, that would be very understandable, wouldn't it? She might struggle to recognize that her own needs for affirmation and reassurance might get in the way of accepting her children as adults with their own lives. Let me say that again. She might struggle to recognize that her own needs for affirmation and reassurance might get in the way of accepting her children as being adults with their own lives. Number three, she might tend to always do what her adult children ask so that they'd come around her more. So rather than saying no when it wasn't convenient, she says yes. Or she may have a motivation to build in a sense of them needing her. If they need me, they won't abandon me. Number four, she doesn't mention what she's been doing, if anything, to grow her own life since her kids left. Does she have friends or a spouse? Maybe the empty nest feelings she had have never gone away, or she hasn't known how to build a life for herself, not as a hands-on mom anymore, because she talks about feeling disconnected. So who has she tried to get connected with after her children left? There also might be feelings of anger. I did everything I could to make sure my own kids didn't feel like I did. And guess what? She seems to have succeeded. Unless she really doesn't like her kids and thinks one or more of them are self-centered, then that's another story. Let's take that one more step. Perhaps her kids don't include her as they could. Adult children do that for many reasons. Pressure, perhaps, from their spouse, living far away, needing to work two jobs, or again, maybe they didn't appreciate what she did for them. So these different ideas may help to highlight what she could do. Here's the first idea. Work on having compassion for the child she was, while also realizing her children can't heal those wounds for her. Nor can her relationships with them now heal that past. This realization is very important. If she needs to work out her past, she can do that in many ways. She can go to therapy or use different workbooks that are out there and readily available. There are many workbooks such as Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents or Adult Children of All Different Kinds of Parents. And they're good workbooks. Many of them are good workbooks. Number two, maybe she needs to have as non-emotional conversation as she can with her adult children about her desire to be more included in their lives or show even gratitude toward her. She may need to set some boundaries herself over her own availability if she's feeling used. If she's tried that and still doesn't feel heard, she could ask them to join her in family therapy just for a couple of sessions to see if a therapist could help the family develop different practices with one another. It may be that they feel guilty for not including her more. Who knows? But sometimes a therapist can help everybody take responsibility for what they bring to the solution, but also to the problem. And here's the third idea. It may be very helpful for her to create more relationships to create connection in her now empty nest lifestyle with friends or neighbors. What about all those siblings? Maybe she could join a club or a church or volunteer in the community. Feeling needed herself could be very helpful to her. And if she has a partner, how are they building a life together? If not, is she open to dating or somehow looking at her own life in a fresh way? Maybe she could take a class at a community center, help out at the library, whatever. When you begin looking, there's so many opportunities out there. And you'll make friends, you'll make connections with people who are interested in the same thing you are. I hope these ideas are helpful to you. You're very brave to reach out to me on self-work. Good luck to you. Thank you for being here. I want to tell any of you who might be dealing or trying to cope with the suicide of a loved one, the Arkansas Psychological Association is having some great speakers on October the 9th at an in-person conference in Little Rock, Arkansas, but also we are offering it virtually. So you could sign in wherever you listen. It's October the 9th. It's open to the public. I believe the fee is $40 for an all-day long class, especially in the afternoon. I'm moderating a panel of three people, one a local psychiatrist who lost her father to suicide, and two parents, Chris and Martha Thomas, who lost their 24-year-old daughter. So you can go to ARCPA, A-R-P-A, psych, psych.org and register. That's ARPAPsych.org and register for Thursday. Also, any of you clinicians can join in. That would be great. You can get four CEUs for that. The next day, we have a clinician-only conference featuring Dr. John Summers Flanagan and his, what I believe is the best suicide assessment tool I've ever been exposed to. And he will be teaching for 6 hours on Friday. Again, if you're interested and if you're a clinician, you could be an LPC, social worker, it doesn't matter. You can actually join for the same price as the members of or the Arkansas Psychological Association. So that's October the 10th. And again, the link is ARPA, A-R-P-A, psych, P-S-Y-C-H dot org. And I'll hope to see you there. Again, it's in person or virtual. Thank you as always for you being here. It means so very much to me. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self-Work.